AP Radio News. I'm Tim McGuire. Parts of New England, especially along the coast into eastern Massachusetts and Maine, are seeing blizzard conditions this morning as another storm rolls through. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker says people have to stay off the roads.
Driving conditions will be very difficult, and we continue to urge everybody to stay off the roads for the entire day.
Top winds have already hit 60 miles an hour behind the storm, the coldest temperatures in years. Forecasts call for 20 below in some places by early tomorrow morning. And it's not just New England weathering a winter storm. National Weather Service meteorologist Andrew Orison says people from the southern plains to Kentucky, Tennessee, and points south could see freezing rain and snow.
We do have a new storm system that will be coming across the southern U.S. by later Sunday and especially through Monday. And by the time we get to Tuesday, we're expecting an area of low pressure to be redeveloping right off the east coast.
Some forecasts call for up to a foot of snow, parts of Kentucky and Tennessee tomorrow into Tuesday. Police in Copenhagen, Denmark, say they have shot and killed a man responsible for the killing of two people in shootings at a free speech event and a synagogue. Prime Minister Helle Thorning-Schmidt, who went to the synagogue where a Jewish man was killed, tells TV2 Denmark.
A man has lost his life in a service of that synagogue, and we are devastated. Our thoughts goes to his family. We are with them.
Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is calling for the massive immigration of European Jews to Israel. Except for an area around a key rail hub, officials say the latest ceasefire in eastern Ukraine seems to be working, kindling slender hopes of an end to the conflict between the government troops and Russian-backed separatists that have killed 5,300 people. This is AP Radio News. The government will be coming out today with new rules on the use of drones.
The Federal Aviation Administration inadvertently released draft rules it had written that would open the door to widespread use of small drones for all types of purposes. Aerial photography, crop monitoring, and inspections of bridges and other tall structures. The regulations would apply to lightweight, unmanned aircraft weighing less than 55 pounds. The documents indicate the FAA is dropping its demand that operators get the same type of licenses required for those who pilot manned aircraft. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
An unwelcome visitor got it nasty on a flight that was supposed to fly from Los Angeles to Portland. An Alaska Airlines spokesman says Flight 567 was taxiing on the runway last night when a scorpion stung a woman on the hand. Plane returned to the gate. Woman was checked by medics. She refused additional medical treatment but did not get on the plane. Flight attendants killed the critter. I'm Tim McGuire, AP Radio News.
You're so annoying.
You're so annoying.
Stop copying me.
Stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop copying me.
Mom, tell her to stop talking to me.
Kids will spend 10 minutes copying everything their sibling says.
You're such a doofus.
You're such a doofus.
How about 2 minutes to brush their teeth? Brushing for 2 minutes now can save your child from severe tooth pain later. For fun 2-minute videos to watch while brushing, visit 2min2x.org. 2 minutes twice a day. They have the time.
Mom!
A message from the Partnership for Healthy Mouths, Healthy Lives, and the Ad Council.
The West Point Society of Washington, D.C., supported by alumni, sponsors, and individuals, is preparing their 8th Annual Leadership and Ethics Conference for D.C. Metro Area 11th graders, March 19th at the George Mason University Arlington campus. Students will learn about this year's theme of What Does Living an Honorable Life Look Like? From members of America's current greatest generation, including ROTC and West Point cadets, as well as recent graduates serving the nation. For more information, search West Point Ethics and Leadership on Facebook.
This is Mark Amtower. If you're looking for cost-effective and efficient methods for marketing your products or services to the government or to other government contractors, look to LinkedIn. There are over 400,000 members in the D.C. area and more than 92 million nationwide, but only a small percentage actually use it well. I can show you how to leverage LinkedIn in ways that support your marketing, sales, and business development efforts. I do this for large and small companies, and I can do it for you. Drop me a line at mark@federaldirect.net.
Let's celebrate. Celebrate the survivors. Celebrate the progress made. On Saturday, May 9th, Mother's Day weekend, join the Komen DC Race for the Cure on the National Mall. The annual 5K walk-run is an event the whole family can enjoy. Komen has invested over $35 million in the National Capital Region, and with your help, they can continue to fund life-saving breast cancer screenings, treatment, and services. For more information and to register, visit ComanDCRaceForTheCure.org.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Executive Leaders Radio. In this hour, you'll hear directly from our region's finest business leaders. Through each of the interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, about leadership styles and opportunities that lie ahead. Prepare to be inspired and entertained and to hear wisdom unheard elsewhere. Executive Leaders Radio.
You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from the offices of Optifor. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Les Smolin from Vistage. And we have a great lineup of guests for you on our show today, including, Les, will you please give us the rundown?
Thanks, Herb. We have Tian Wang, Chairman and CEO of Tech 2000. After that, we have Ahmed Mehdi, Managing Partner, Paragon Remodeling. Third, we have Mike Curtin, CEO of DC Central Kitchen. And fourth, we have Ahmad Abuzakuk, President and CEO, Concept Plus.
Excellent. Let's get to know Tian Wang, Chairman and CEO of Tech 2000. Tian, what is Tech 2000?
Tech 2000 is an advanced technology training and mobile software application development company.
What's that mean? I don't understand.
So we do training and develop mobile applications for Fortune 100 companies.
How large or how small is this business?
We have 30 full-time equivalents and about $12 million in revenue.
And how old is the business?
Business is 25 years old.
And how long have you been involved with it?
I got involved about a year and a half ago when I acquired it.
You bought the business?
Yes.
And where'd the money come from to buy the business?
A combination of my own capital and an investor. Institutional investor.
And this institutional investor, did you bring them into the deal or did they bring you into the deal?
We brought them into the deal.
So you identified the investor and thought the chemistry was right.
The chemistry is great, yeah.
All right. So where are you from originally?
From Lakewood, New Jersey.
Lakewood, New Jersey.
I know I don't sound like it.
And how young were you when you started working?
My dad had me in the Chinese restaurant just doing stuff at the age of 10.
How many Chinese restaurants did your dad have?
He had three.
He had three Chinese restaurants. Where was your dad from?
He's from Southern China.
He's an immigrant. So he managed to get enough money together to buy a bunch of restaurants?
Well, he came here to go to college and got a job at Bendix doing engineering and then saved up the money and just went for it.
He's quite an entrepreneurial story. Yeah. How about your mom? What'd your mom do?
She was stay at home. And after the last of her kids went to college, she bought a travel agency and became an entrepreneur herself.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
Two younger brothers and two younger sisters.
So you're the oldest of five. How do you think that affected you?
I got a lot of attention from my family because I think, you know, being the oldest of an Asian family, you kind of get a lot of the attention. You're the oldest son. And
a lot of attention. Does that mean responsibility?
Yeah, responsibility and attention.
You think so?
Yeah.
And you say that when this business, you bought it with your money and some investors' money. You had a previous business success?
Yes. I had a company that I founded in 2001, sold it in 1991, sold it in 2003.
So you've got this entrepreneurial thing going on, this responsibility thing, this thing about making money and making success, huh? Where do you think that came from?
I think I didn't know any other life. You know, I just observed my family. My grandfathers were both entrepreneurs.
Your grandfathers?
My father, my mother, yeah.
Your grandfathers were in China, though, weren't they?
Yeah. I had one in Malaysia. He had a huge construction business.
Oh, so this thing about do your own thing and take responsibility sort of in your blood, isn't it? When you were 10 years old and working in that restaurant, did you feel bad because all your friends were outside playing and you were having to work, your father's making you work?
No, I loved it. It was great. I just liked working there and helping the family out. And
you like work?
Yeah, I love work.
Joe?
Tian, let me ask you a question. You said something to us earlier. You said you'd never retire. Could you financially retire now?
Probably could.
Okay, so then what's your passion? What drives you to get up each day and continue to do this?
I just want to make an impact. You know, the company I'm doing now is really innovative. We're making an impact on our customers and on their employees and their clients.
What time do you go into work in the morning?
I try to get to the office by 9.
What time do you leave?
Around 7 or 8 at night. Uh-huh.
You don't work weekends, though, do you?
Yeah, I do.
You do. So you're putting in, you know, 10, 12-hour days. You're working 6 or 7 days a week. But you don't have to financially do that, huh?
No, I'm setting an example for my kids, too. That's the other thing. You know, I have a lot of friends who have wealthy friends who have kids that are a little bit entitled. So
what do you mean?
I want my kids to see that, hey, Dad's got homework every night. He's carrying a 40-pound backpack just like you are, and it never stops.
Mom and Dad, where are your success nowadays?
Yeah, they are.
Mm-hmm. You think they're surprised?
Probably.
Nah, come on. Really?
I never asked them. That's a good question.
What do you mean you never asked them?
I think they're happy. They're proud of me. And
did they ever say, you know, you've done good enough, enjoy your life, stop
working?
Yeah,
my dad's constantly telling me to chill out and relax.
Uh-huh. Is he still working?
No.
Uh-huh. How many years ago did he retire? How old was he when he retired?
Sort of in his mid-70s, maybe. Uh-huh. He slowed down.
You don't see retiring, though. You want to keep going.
Yeah, I'll never retire.
Mm-hmm. You really enjoy it.
Yeah.
Do you think they're proud of you?
Yeah.
Why?
Because, yeah, having a positive impact on people and have a good family. And
what do you mean a positive impact on people? What are you talking about?
Well, you know,
that's what the name of the game when you go make a lot of money.
No, it's not. It's to try to, you know, do the best job you can for your customers and your employees, and the rest takes care of itself.
I mean, I see the emotion in your face. You're sure about it? I thought it was money, money, money. You got an investor. What are you talking about?
No, money's important, but it's not number one. It's not even in the top three, I don't think. You know, you do it for fun. You do it to make an impact. You do it to work with great people. You do it to make an impact on the industries. And, you know, we're making a huge impact on the education industry. Huge impact. I mean, it could change lives, you know. So that kind of stuff is more exciting to me than
What do you mean it could
paycheck.
Change lives? What are you talking about?
Well, we'll be able to personalize education for not just corporate learners, but also for you know, university students and hopefully K-12 at some point. Mm-hmm. So we're developing technology that analyzes sort of the learning activities of all these students.
So, Tan, I'm really wondering here, where does making an impact show up for you when you were a kid? Was there some event, some experience?
Yeah, it was constant. He doesn't know anything. He doesn't know any way to live but make an impact.
No, I never really made that sort of conscious thought about it.
Yeah, it's like continuous. Yeah. It's in his brain. It's in his blood.
Yeah, it's like in the DNA kind of.
Yeah,
it's in
speaking of DNA, I mean, when you look to your parents, were they seeking to make an impact?
No, I don't think so. I think they were immigrants. They wanted to have their kids go to college. They wanted to, you know, I think they were doing it more to provide.
So what is it about you that converted to making an impact? What happened when you were young that changed you such that you said, I'm going to be different from my parents. I want to make an impact.
I didn't even know what they were doing, and I didn't know what I was doing. You know, I just got older and got a little wiser, I think.
It might also be because he had substantial financial success, and now his priorities have shifted.
Yeah, I think so. Before I sold my first company, I was probably even more hardcore about, you know, driving. So
Perhaps through the course of time and the success, as opposed to just, you know, survival, maybe what's happened is his priorities have shifted toward really giving back. Is that true?
I think you're right, Doctor. Mm-hmm. As a matter of fact, you've really delved deep into my mind. You got me figured out. That's good.
So it's, what's this giving back stuff all about? What do you mean by that?
I think if you do well, just sort of like what Mike's doing. You know, he's like awesome. He's doing great things for people, and I think
he's running a nonprofit.
Doesn't matter. I think if you get involved in anything and some people get a benefit or they get a great feeling by helping others. So that happened to me. I know it's going on with Mike. Joe and I talked about The Go-Giver at lunch today. I mean, you know, it's a great book, but it's sort of like, I think Joe already knew that. Mike already knew that way before the book was ever published. But you get by giving. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so there's no better getting than giving, really. I think when you realize that, that's sort of when you...
When we realize what? Give me that again?
There's no better gift than giving to people.
What are you talking about there? What
just
do you mean?
Just give your time, your energy, your money, you know, your wisdom, and sort of throw it into the universe, and funny thing happens. It comes back to you in a positive way.
Who gave it to you?
So many people. you know, countless teachers, coaches, friends. So many. I mean, just too many. I was very lucky and to have people give me a shot, you know.
Tien, you're thought of as a thought leader in technology circles. How does that relate to how you grew up and in terms of continuing to give back to other professionals in the market through your blogs and other things?
Yeah, I think it's along the lines of what we're talking about now. You know, I sort of enjoyed, you know, doing stuff at University of Maryland and now Georgetown and just kind of working with younger kids and students and professors and sort of trying to help them think through things. I get a lot of benefit out of it. Not non-financial, but I get a lot of psychic benefit. I feel good and I learn a lot too. You know, that's the other thing. I think I have this thirst for knowledge ever since I was a kid, and working with younger people, I learn a ton. I mean, you wouldn't expect it, but it's a great byproduct, you know.
Tien, what's the website address for Tech 2000?
It's t2000inc.com.
Let me have it one more time.
Yeah, t2000inc.com.
We've been speaking with Tien Wong, Chairman and CEO of Tech 2000 here on Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Liz Small. And this is, don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. And your name is?
Dana Theus.
And the name of the organization?
EmpowerCoaching.com.
And what does Empower Coaching do?
Well, we support mid-level to senior managers and leaders achieve professional success by developing themselves personally.
Why does this turn you on so much?
Well, I have found in my own experience and my own leadership journey that the better I was at being a good human being, the better leader and the better business I ran and the more successful I was. And I want to help other people do that.
So you're able to help the folks in an organization throughout the organization achieve what they're looking for, as well as help the organization move forward.
Well, to move an organization forward, you've got to master the soft skills of dealing with people effectively. You've got to learn to negotiate every relationship successfully for both parties. You have to communicate confidently. I support people and help them learn to develop those skills themselves to be strong leaders.
And you have a specialty working with women?
I do work a lot with women. They're drawn to this work, but not exclusively.
And to learn more about what you're up to, is there a website address?
InPowerCoaching.com. That's InPowerCoaching.com.
Excellent. This has been your Business Spotlight. And your name is?
David Shulman.
And David, the organization is?
Information Concepts.
And what makes Information Concepts special?
We're a fixed-price, full lifecycle custom software development shop.
Wait, your fixed-price software development. How long have you guys been around?
32 years.
So how do you manage to do that? You must have some very special processes to make sure that you sell what you can deliver with confidence and then deliver what you sell. Otherwise, you wouldn't be around this long. Do you have any repeat customers?
All our customers are repeat customers.
So you're telling me that customers buy software development from you because they know they get a fixed price. They know what they're going to get. Do you guarantee a timeline also?
Absolutely. Everything's guaranteed. Every screen, every process, every report, line item and priced, and every line item has a date.
Wait a minute. So you're telling me that all the interim processes are dated and priced so that when you get to the final result, there's no surprises?
Exactly.
Huh. And how long have you been doing this for?
We've been doing it 32 years. What we've done in the last few years, if I might, is developed a visualization process that allows the clients to actually see what we're going to build and take it out for a test drive and kick the tires without us writing a line of code.
What's the website address for this organization?
Infoconcepts.com.
Let me have that one more time.
Infoconcepts.com.
This has been your Business Spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Les Small and Vistage. We'd like to introduce Ahmed Mati.
Maddie. Yep.
Managing partner, Paragon Remodeling. What is Paragon Remodeling? What are you guys doing?
We're a remodeling firm which specializes in everything from interior to exterior to full-on construction, some real estate development as well.
And how large or how small is this company?
We're about 40 employees currently.
40 employees. And how old is the company?
11 years now.
And how long have you been with the company?
11 years.
How old were you when you started the company?
I was 19 years old.
You were 19 years old, and it's now 40 employees. And what did Dad and what did Mom do for a living?
My dad was a teacher, and my mom worked for a bank.
So which one ran their own business?
None of them. I didn't have anybody in my immediate family that ran a business.
Nobody ran a business in your family, and you were 19 years old, and you started a business. Didn't it occur to you that it's risky starting a business? Why did you start a business? Why did you go get a job?
Well, you make a good point. I kind of was in a different scenario. I was kind of pressed up against the wall.
What do you mean?
Due to family circumstances.
What kind of family circumstances?
I unexpectedly lost my father when I was 19 to cancer.
And where? How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I'm the middle child. I have an older sister and a younger brother.
So you're the middle child, and you felt pressed up against the wall. Did somebody explicitly tell you to take responsibility, or did you just assume the responsibility?
Well, I assumed it through the course of the process, but I was, you know, explicitly told by my father, like on his deathbed, that he expects me to take care of the family. And
what did he say to you?
He more or less told me that I need to take care of the family, and he reminded me that I always should always try to give back in conjunction of doing so.
And you were 19.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. How'd that make you feel?
A little bit of pressure, to say the least.
What do you mean?
I mean, it was the whole process was mortifying throughout, and that was just it was definitely a reality check. It's kind of.
So as opposed to running away, you stood there and you took the responsibility?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the only option, really. So.
No, there were other options. They just didn't occur to you.
Yep.
Uh-huh. So you decided to start a remodeling business.
Yep.
Did you go to college?
I did. I went to George Washington University.
And what was your major in college?
Mechanical engineering.
So why didn't you just go get a job? I know your father told you you had to take responsibility, but the job would have been the safe bet.
I just knew from past experiences that just from previous jobs, some of them, you know, from working as an office clerk at a law firm to, you know, even working at NASA for a little bit, that it just wasn't for me. I wanted to work for myself.
So what did you learn about yourself from those jobs that you were just mentioning, the NASA and the law firm?
Well, at the law firm, I realized how overqualified I was for the job. I was shredding papers and, you know, being a paper boy more or less. But it was just to get some money together to start my business.
Is that what you did? You actually collected that money and put it to work?
Well, yeah, I collected my money beforehand, and luckily I didn't for a rainy day, and that was the rainy day, I guess. So I had about, you know, $10,000 I pulled together to start my business.
So where does the confidence come from? Because you're 19 years old, you're having a lot of work experience, you jump into a field that you really haven't done before. I mean, this is a mixing bowl for a recipe that I would say run from, but you don't.
Yeah, well, like, again, I mean, I guess it was kind of a blessing that I was pushed in the corner on that in that respect, because it kind of just I had to work under pressure. But, yeah, it was definitely intimidating. It was pretty terrifying at times.
So what did you learn about yourself that said I can do this as you were going through that?
Well, I just constantly try to remind myself the end goal as far as when I went home, I'd see my family, and I just always remembered. So as far as that was.
So your family being what, brothers and your brother, younger brother and older sister?
Yep, and my mother.
And your mom?
Yeah.
So what was she doing while this was going on for you that actually kept you going?
She was a little bit mixed feelings on it. She was worried about the fact, she wanted me to maybe get a job and get for that job security. She was constantly saying, why don't you do that and maybe do this part-time? And I just knew that wasn't going to be a possibility to do it all. So I just kind of had to plug ahead. She's very happy now, and she supports that idea. And she's
ever have any doubt?
Did I ever have any doubt throughout the course of it? Yeah, definitely. I mean, I had days where I wouldn't eat, you know, where things were just very stressful. Just a simple phone call from a client that just wasn't expected could totally make me just leave the restaurant with my food in front of me and just say, I'm all good. I'll just close my bill out. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely had those rough days. I had some really good days, some in-betweens, more ups than downs.
And the thing that kept you going through it all was what?
Oh, my family. I mean, I felt like I could prove, I felt like I could do it. I mean, I was trying to just stay positive.
You started proving something? Was that important in what you were doing? Proving to yourself?
It was more to myself. It wasn't like I was trying to prove to anybody outside of my family. It was just more so that I felt like I was fully capable of doing so. Mm-hmm. So,
what would your older sister say about the success you've had?
My older sister, she's super proud, very supportive. I have a very good relationship with my siblings. So, but she brags about me all the time now, probably a little bit more than I need to. So.
It's okay though.
I don't mind it.
How does that make you feel?
It's a good feeling to be able to actually take care of my family, and I currently still take care of my mother and take care of the finances and things like that.
What'd your mom say?
She says it, you know, I hear it here and there when I'm out with her and stuff. She's definitely very proud. I think she wants to make sure she keeps my ego in check. So, so that's kind of, but, you know, I know deep down in there she's super proud.
How about cousins and aunts and uncles? Who else had an influence on you?
You know, my aunts, my immediate family is here, obviously. Everybody's back home in Egypt. That's where I'm from originally. They're super proud as well, but I didn't really have much. It was all new territory for them. As far as I came from a very poor background, they didn't really know much about what it takes to start a business. It all just seemed like very daunting.
How do you know that back there in Egypt, your extended family is proud of you? How do you know that?
Well, I think they know, and they're super happy that I'm taking care of my mother. And you know,
how did they know? How did you tell them? Did your mom?
My mom tells them all the time.
Do you get feedback from them? Do you communicate with them?
I do contact with them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what have they said to you? What have they told you?
They tell me that they're proud of me. They're thankful. You know, they say that she's lucky to have me. I feel like I'm lucky to have her. So.
Mm-hmm.
So is there room in your life for another woman? Maybe someone closer to your age?
Yeah, definitely. If you guys can help me out here. I didn't know you were going that angle. So.
This is a radio show as opposed to a matchmaking. So it was a good question. Who had the next?
I've got a quick question for you. You start your company at 19. You're a young guy. What was it about you that made your employees want to jump on board?
You know, initially when I was 19, I was still doing. I was in college while I was doing it, and I completed college, so I was doing both at once. But I had a big issue at the start with employees. It was hard to get respect as a 19-year-old. I just can't even sugarcoat it. It was just something where, you know, guys didn't show up or things didn't happen, and you have to be, you're held accountable to a client, a customer. So I had to regain that. I had to gain that over time. I realized I had to gain that. It hasn't been an issue currently. It hasn't been for years. But if anything, I got more people trying to be on board than not. So that's a nice feeling because, you know, dealing with customers directly is a challenge in itself. You want to make sure that, you know, the soldiers you have with you are, you know, ready to move. And that's kind of where. So I don't know if that answered your question.
Oh, interesting. Let's see. The website address for your organization is what?
It's www.paragonremodeling.com. Mm-hmm.
And how old are you now?
I'm 30.
What's life going to be like when you're 40?
I think I'm going to still be working. I'm striving more towards passion projects and some other things I'm working on.
What do you mean by passion projects? What do you mean?
Well, when I started this business, it was more so, just to be honest, to take care of the bills and, you know,
to survive.
But I did cultivate it in a manner where it became a passion project. I do love it. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. You think you're ever going to retire?
I got a lot of other things to do, I think. So I think I got some time ahead of me. Mm-hmm. It's not really on my mind. I'm enjoying what I'm doing. And
what do you enjoy about it?
I like being able to just do my own schedule and just make sure things
Let me have the website address one more time.
It's paragonremodeling.com.
Mm-hmm. And your name again is?
Ahmed Maddy.
And this is Herb Cohen with my co-host, Mr. Les Smolin from Vistage. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. Isabella, what is BusinessWise CPAs?
BusinessWise CPA supports government contractors, small businesses, and nonprofits with outsourced CFO and financial consulting services.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the Marketing Director.
And as a Marketing Director, what does that mean?
Well, I actually wear several hats. My primary role is to improve and extend the branding of BusinessWise CPA through referrals, client meetings, networking in the D.C. area, as well as supporting current client relationships.
And what do you like most about your job?
I like the most that I don't have to be at a desk all day. I'm out and about meeting new folks and learning experiences from other entrepreneurs.
Right. What makes your organization so special in your view?
I believe our added value is that we are not just a number report kind of type firm. We're very much integrated with our clients. They rely on us for all important decisions. We help them not only with the numbers, but on the future growth of the business.
And what is it that the clients appreciate most about the company?
That they can call us and they talk to the same person every time.
Okay, and who's the perfect client?
Perfect client is small to mid-size organization looking to save on a full-time employee and as well as get the added value of the consulting.
Great. What's the website for the company?
www.businesswisecpa.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Isabella Fuentes, Marketing Director at BusinessWise CPAs. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight. This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. Welcome, Shirley. Shirley, what's The Success Doctor all about?
It's a global workforce and talent management consulting organization. What we do is track trends, and we identify best practices and strategies for organizations around the world of all sizes, all industries, mm-hmm. and help them understand how to get great talent, how to keep it, and how to make sure that they get the most out of it.
And what's your role in the company?
My role is president and CEO, and I actually do a lot of the coaching and speaking and consulting.
And what do you like most about that?
Absolutely love the strategy development and helping to get leaders to that aha moment.
Mm-hmm. And what makes the organization so special, in your view?
Capturing a lot of the great best practices that we've been able to do. And I think, you know, my brand, I build great relationships and I provide them what they need instead of what I want them to have.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think the clients appreciate most about you and your company?
I make the strategies, even though they're global, I make them very, very customized and practical.
Uh-huh. And who, in your view, is the ideal client, the perfect client?
The perfect client is one that has a need, and the perfect client is one that can recognize that there is an opportunity with the strategies that we provide for them to make their organizations better.
Mm-hmm. And what do you personally enjoy most about the work?
I love seeing the strategies come to life. I love seeing the impact and the results that come as a result of it. Mm-hmm. And I love when they call me back and thank me because they've seen change.
That's excellent. And what's the website for the company?
DrShirleyDavis.com. That's www.drshirleydavis.com.
Thank you, Shirley. We've been speaking with Dr. Shirley Davis, President and CEO, The Success Doctor. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Les Smolin, Vistage. We'd like to introduce Mike Curtin, CEO of DC Central Kitchen. Mike, what is DC Central Kitchen? What are you guys up to?
DC Central Kitchen is a for-profit company, often referred to as a nonprofit. We aggregate food that would otherwise have gone to waste. We bring it back to the kitchen. We prepare 5,000 meals a day that we deliver to homeless shelters, transitional homes, halfway houses, and other social service agencies. While we do that, we run culinary job training programs for men and women coming out of incarceration, coming out of addiction, folks that have been victims of abuse, chronically homeless, chronically unemployed. And we run a series of social enterprise businesses that employ many of those men and women to the point now where our budget is 65% funded through earned income as opposed to philanthropy.
Tell me a little bit about how many people you affect each year, Mike.
The kitchen would affects tens of thousands of people. We're doing 12,000 meals a day. In addition to the 5,000 shelter meals, we provide another 7,000 meals a day, locally sourced scratch cooked meals in DC schools. Uh-huh. We also deliver food.
I get it. You're doing a lot of work here. You're affecting tens of thousands of people. You're the CEO. How long have you been the CEO?
I've been the CEO since 2007. I joined the kitchen in 2004.
Uh-huh. Where are you from originally?
I'm native Washingtonian.
Mm-hmm. Whereabouts?
I was born at Georgetown Hospital. I grew up out in Potomac, Maryland. I've lived in D.C., Maryland, and now in Virginia for the last 20 years.
You're more like your mom or your dad?
I think I'm a fabulous mix of both of them.
What do you mean?
My parents, as I always say, they're tough acts to follow. My father's an attorney, a state trust tax attorney, does a lot of important work keeping families together, helping families build for the future. My mother was a teacher. But became a stay-at-home, full-time mother when we came around, and they were both incredible examples of work ethic and passion.
So how are you bringing your mom and your dad to work every day?
Well, I think my dad probably through the work ethic, to see him nights, weekends, whenever the clients needed him, he was there. My mom, her dedication to her family and the community, volunteer work that she did, is a huge impact on myself and my brothers
and
sisters.
So what turns you on about this gig? I mean, this is tough. You know, you're working with a limited budget. You got 1,001 moving pieces. Why are you doing this?
I often say I do this because I'm selfish. I think that we have there's a lot of inequity, inequality in our country, in our communities. There's a lot of problems that our kids are going to be facing, and if I can help create a better, more equitable environment for our children, that's what I want to do.
How young were you, somewhere between the ages of 8 and 14, when this social justice theme began to show itself up?
My first childhood memory is the day after Bobby Kennedy was shot. And I just remember the huge impact that had on my parents.
What kind of impact? What do you mean?
Just to see them sad, I think, or lost almost for the first time. I was never seen them like that.
Why do you think they were lost or sad?
I think like a good bit of this country, after Dr. King was murdered and then Bobby soon after, I think we lost our way. We began this wandering around and lost focus on this idea of truly creating a fair place for everyone.
So you really believe in the mission. Mission's really important to you.
The mission is everything. And I see my role as the CEO of the organization, as the leader of the organization, to make sure that everything that we do can be traced directly back to our mission and what we are all about.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to imagine what the conversation around the dinner table was like prior to Dr. King and Bobby Kennedy being assassinated. What was the conversation that would have implanted the seed about this inequality or creating a fair place, as you say, for everyone?
I'll be honest with you. I don't remember those conversations as much as I do remember at a young age volunteering, going out and delivering Meals on Wheels with my mother. I do remember my father being very involved in a lot of community activities. So it was more of a follow by example than mm-hmm. a conversation about what was right.
Were you the only child, or you have brothers and sisters?
I'm the oldest of five.
The oldest of five. And mom grabbed you, or she grabbed all the kids, and everybody was doing this.
It was me and my brother, who was just younger than I am.
And you could have been out playing the whole time.
We could have been. It was a beautiful day, as I recall. But we happened to be, she took us in from the backyard up to our room, and we said a prayer, and then we threw out every toy gun we had in our toy chest, and we never had another one in our house.
Mike, didn't you tell me you grew up in this area in one religion, and you went ahead and experimented with some other religions or something like that? What was that all about?
Sure, that's what college is for, right? Experimenting. Uh-huh. A failed pre-med career turned into a religion major and focusing on Buddhism and Eastern religions. And then that led to travels and working in Japan.
What was attractive about Buddhism and other religions to you?
What I found fascinating, actually, was a book I read by a guy named Thomas Merton, who's a Trappist monk, and he wrote a book about the continuity that most people might not see between Buddhism and Christianity. And I was very interested in exploring that. And
exploring the similarities as opposed to the differences?
The similarities.
What did you learn? What do you know that I don't know?
I don't know. What do you know?
I don't know.
I think what it comes down to in many ways, and some people are frustrated with this, but if you get through a lot of the trappings of religion, you come down to of some very basic beliefs and tenets across the board, and those have to do with, again, it sounds very trite, but the golden rule, and taking care of other people. And lifting people up to a better place.
So you've studied religions, and you've come to the conclusion through your own studies, and you've certainly looked at this a lot more than me, and probably a lot of us. I mean, I hear a lot about the differences, but you're seeing the similarities. And what are the similarities again? Give me that, and how that's affected your life.
I think the similarities, what you're trying to find is a place of happiness, a place of peace, a place of contentment. And I think that... in that journey, and I think this is what I'm trying to do at the kitchen now, is to create that opportunity for people to find that peace and that contentment and that moment of empowerment that leads to liberation. And I think every religion speaks to that, and every religious leader really speaks to that idea of empowerment through liberation.
Do you think you've made a difference through the kitchen?
I'd like to think that we have. I'm incredibly blessed to work with an amazing group of men and women.
Have people come back that have been through your doors and told you that you've affected them?
Yes,
Give
absolutely.
Me an example.
Well, we had a guy not too long ago came back in, and he pulled out a gas bill, a bill from the gas company, and he was ecstatic. Most of us don't get thrilled when we get bills. This guy was in his 50s, first time he ever had an address. First time he ever had a bill, first time he had a key, and this was something that made a huge impression on him and changed his life.
How did it make you feel?
made me feel great. It makes me feel that what we do does mean something.
But it didn't put any money in your pocket. It didn't help you pay your car bill.
No, it didn't. But these are stories that fire the kitchen, that inspire us, that inspire people in the community to continue to work with us, invest in our work. And that builds more opportunity, and that's what we thrive on.
Can the community get involved in your organization? How can they get involved with your organization? How can we get involved with you?
You can go to dccentralkitchen.org. We have volunteer opportunities, but only 365 days a year. You can sign up to volunteer on our website. We have about 15,000 people that come from really across the country and around the world to come volunteer with us. And certainly you can invest in our work right on that website, dccentralkitchen.org.
Do you have events and stuff that I can come to in order to get a better sense of what you guys are up to?
Absolutely. We have graduations, 7 a year, that those are open to the public. Those are on our website.
Graduations? What do you mean?
When we graduate the men and women from our culinary job training class, they go through our program, they graduate, they move on to jobs, start a new chapter in their lives.
So you're not just feeding people.
No, we're doing the whole thing. We're giving the fish. We're teaching the fish. And the problem with that proverb is it sort of stops there. The question becomes, what if all the fishermen are unemployed? So then we've moved on now to the employment piece and really creating opportunities, but also modeling for other employers what's possible.
And does that create that fair place you speak of?
Absolutely. A job is an empowering thing. And to prevent people from having that opportunity is really tragic, and so that's what we're trying to do.
Hmm. Are you married?
I am.
Kids?
Kids, yes. We have 3.
How old?
18, 15, and 12.
So what are you doing with them to teach them the same lesson your mom taught you?
I'm trying to do, I think, the same way that my parents did is lead by example. I want them to find their place in the world. But I also want them to understand that their place in the world is very connected to everyone else's place in the world, and that what they do needs to respect that and to hopefully improve others' places in the world, not only their own.
How do you know it's working? I mean, how do you know that they're actually getting that?
Well, our oldest daughter, who's a first year at UVA now, started a chapter of Best Buddies, which is an incredible organization that works with kids with disabilities, emotional issues. And partners them up with kids that don't face those obstacles. Mm-hmm. And she started that on her own and has continued that kind of work now in college.
Something's taken hold. Mike, what's the website address for DC Central Kitchen?
dccentralkitchen.org.
We've been speaking with Mr. Mike Curtin, CEO of DC Central Kitchen, here on Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Les Mullen from Vistage. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this Business Spotlight.
This is Peter Schwartz with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining me for this segment is Doug Kay, who is a principal with a firm called Offit Kerman. What is Offit Kerman, Doug?
Offit Kerman is a full-service law firm in the Mid-Atlantic region with offices from Philadelphia all the way down to Tysons Corner, Virginia, where I work.
Right. And you're a lawyer with the firm?
I'm a lawyer with the firm.
What practice area do you specialize in?
I mostly do work in commercial litigation, although I also do work in doing criminal defense and personal injury, anything that gets me to trial.
Anything that gets you to trial. Well, why do your customers appreciate you?
I think they appreciate me because I am a careful and sympathetic listener, and I try to offer concrete solutions to their most vexing legal problems.
Well, give us an example. Do you have, without mentioning specifics, a recent example of where you were really good at this? How about your favorite client up till now, without getting into two particulars there?
Well, I represented a fellow who was in a commercial lease, and the landlord was determined to make him pay more than he should have been paying. And we had to go to court, and we had to go all the way through trial, and the client really appreciated the effort, and we got an excellent result for the client. And that was very satisfying. And since then, he's been talking me up all over town, so I can't thank him enough.
Yeah. What's the best part of practicing law for you?
I would say that it is taking people through difficult circumstances when they think they don't have any options and trying to find a good solution for them.
Right. What's the website address for the law firm?
www.offutkerman.com.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Doug Kay, who's the principal with Offutt Kerman. This is Peter Schwartz, and that was your Business Spotlight.
This is Les Smolin with Vistage International, and this is your Business Spotlight. Joining us today is Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn and Burnett, a law firm. Mark, welcome. What is Cohn and Burnett?
We are a law firm that focuses on trusts and estates. So we do wills, trusts, powers of attorney, estate planning, and estate administration.
And what's your role in the company?
I'm the founder and the senior partner.
So what does it mean to be a senior partner?
Well, it means that in our case, I'm the thought leader, the visionary, the one who tries to figure out where we're headed. I'm not the managing partner who runs the day-to-day operations.
Okay, and what makes Cohn and Burnett so special?
We are, first of all, focused on taking care of our clients and just on their estate planning and administration. And I think we're one of the first firms in the area to introduce a fixed fee for doing estate planning.
Interesting. And what do they really appreciate about you and the company, your clients, that is?
You know, the clients tell me that they just love the experience. They are very comfortable and confident that their needs are being met here, and they enjoy working with us.
Hmm. And who or what is your perfect client, if you will?
Our perfect client is anybody who cares about what's going to happen to them when they can no longer take care of themselves or their family.
Mm-hmm. And what is it you actually enjoy most about the work?
You know, talking to the clients. That's the part. I could turn over all of the work to other attorneys here, but I hold on to the first part, which is meeting the clients, talking to them, getting to know them, getting to understand where they're, what they need and what they're looking for.
That's great. What's the website for Cohn and Burnett?
CohenandBurnett.com, all spelled out, the A-N-D in between there.
Thank you, Mark. We've been speaking with Mark Cohn, founder of Cohn and Burnett. This is Les Smolin, and that's been your Business Spotlight.
Joining us for this Business Spotlight is Wes Burnett, partner at Optifor. Wes, what is Optifor?
Optifor is a securities firm that integrates legal, tax, and financial and risk in order to offer optimal results for clients.
Who's your perfect client?
Perfect client is someone who actually would like to combine services, make their life simpler, and is very family-oriented. Our firm itself is very family-oriented. We love helping families take care of their own, and that can be multi-generational.
So what would a family need when they would come to you?
Typically, what they're doing is trying to simplify their personal life by trying to have somebody else worry about their legal and their tax and financial affairs and present them with solutions rather than questions.
Solutions rather than questions. So give us an example of a good solution.
A good solution is something that results, for example, in the lowest tax bill, the greatest savings, and taking care of the values important to the family, like saving for college for children or grandchildren or something along those lines.
So what do you enjoy most about your work?
My clients. Although a second place close would be my staff, because I recruit very specifically people who have the same values as our clients. So we truly are very involved with our clients' lives, and they are family to us.
What about your family? Are they in the business too?
No, although there's certainly plenty of lawyers and financial advisors and so on in the business. But no, they all have their own lives, and we're very pleased, quite frankly, with that. I actually have a wife who's a teacher for 42 years, so I take a lot of my values from her.
What is the website?
Optifor.com, OPTIFOUR.com.
Thanks for listening to this Business Spotlight.
We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Les Smolin Vistage. I'd like to introduce Ahmad Abuzakuk.
That's right.
Who is the president and CEO of Concept Plus. Ahmad, what is Concept Plus? What do you guys do?
So Concept Plus, we're an IT services company, essentially developing enterprise applications for the federal government, specifically the DoD healthcare and certain other federal agencies.
How large or how small is this business?
We are about 75 people right now.
About 75 people. And how did you get a job with this company?
Well, I founded it in the fall of 2008.
How old were you when you started the company?
33.
think I'm asking that.
And where are you from originally?
Well, so I was born in Libya, and then came to the States when I was a couple years old, and grew up in Ann Arbor, Michigan.
So you, when did you grow up? You grew up in Libya, and you came to the United States.
Yeah, I was born in Libya in 75, and then came to Michigan in 77.
Uh-huh. How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have two sisters and one brother. I'm the second of four.
The second of four. How'd that affect you?
I didn't have any issues with it.
Uh-huh.
It was my parents' decision. I was just fortunate to be number two.
And when you were 8 to 14 years old, what was going on with you? What kind of did you feel a sense of responsibility? Is that what was going on?
Somewhat. I mean, I was into sports a lot, right? I mean,
what kind of sports were you playing?
I played basketball and soccer. Mm-hmm. My parents really pushed education and sports.
What roles did you play on those sports teams?
Well, in basketball, I was a power forward. Soccer, I was a sweeper.
And what's the commonality? What's the common thread with those two?
Defensive minded. Mm-hmm. And you know, the buck stops here. You know, on the last line. So
is that who you are? The buck stops here.
To an extent, I guess.
Uh huh. Is that the way you feel about your customers? That when they hand you a problem, it's yours and you're going to take care of it.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, what we're given by our customers, I mean, just they need to rest assured, right? We're going to knock it out. We're going to take care of it. We're going to worry about it so they don't have to.
And that feeling began to show up in sports, huh?
Absolutely.
Uh huh. What's enough? How much is enough for you?
How much is enough?
Yeah, how high is up?
The sky.
I mean,
I'm thankful for where I am today. Mm-hmm. You know, you're coming from a humble background, but, you know, there's always more, right? There's always more because you just want to continue to support the people that believe in you. You want to continue to support the, the customers and my family.
Wait a minute. I thought you were going to tell me that there's always another car to buy, another house to buy, another boat to buy, but you didn't tell me that. What you were talking to me about was there's always more people to support, to give back to.
Right.
To be engaged with.
Right.
Don't you do this to accumulate wealth?
I mean, that's the byproduct at the end of the day, but that's not my primary goal.
Wait. The money's the byproduct or helping other people's the byproduct?
Helping other people's the byproduct, and then you receive the money after that. So I don't do this for money, right? I do this to try to make a difference, right? And then what? You become successful at it, you're gonna make money.
Huh. You don't do this. You do that as a byproduct. How interesting. There's a gentleman sitting next to you. I believe his name is Russ Sanford. And what's Russ's role in the company and your business?
So Russ is my vice president. He oversees all of our accounts and the business growth.
So Russ, what's it like working with Ahmed?
It's probably one of the most enjoyable jobs I've had. I'm retired military, and I'm not saying it becomes it next to him. Mm-hmm. But I'm retired military after 26 years. I've been supporting the military healthcare system since I was 17 when I first went in, and I'm retirement age now, so you can do the math.
So, and what's special about him?
The fact that he cares not only, as he said, about the clients, but really about the employees. The individuals that I work with now have been hand chosen pretty much by him all the way through. It's not like we go through an employment.
But you didn't even know that before you came to work for him. So, what did you see in him that said this is it, or did you take a leap of faith?
Little bit of both. I worked with him very briefly at one previous company before he left to start his own firm. So we were together for about 2 months. I was working as an independent consultant. He heard that I was out on the market, taking clients. He asked me to consult to him for some very specific work. I got the opportunity to work with him very closely then and see the way he ran his organization. And when he asked me to join him full time, there wasn't even a hesitation. It was like, this is a company I want to be part of.
And why? Why did you want to be part of it?
Because I saw his dedication. You mentioned about the DOD healthcare. You know, we have work in other federal agencies like Department of State and some other, the VA and stuff. But the dedication that he had and the focus he had to support the military, the war fighters and their beneficiaries, without being part of the military himself, you know, not having that history like so many that do, I thought was really something that was really kind of unusual and outstanding in our market.
And how large or how small is this? 75 people, this organization.
Right.
And you're telling me that that organization feels this way about their founder?
I would say pretty much unequivocally, if you went through and asked any one of the employees, they'd feel the same way. We have...
Absolutely, yes.
Unequivocally and absolutely kind of mean the same thing. Uh-huh. But yes, we're a very close-knit family. When we talk about a company, we are a family. And
No. This is 75 people that come to work. They come in at 9. They leave at 5. They forget about the bit. No?
No. They come in and at... There's some that come in at 6 and stay until 8. There's some that come in at 9 and stay until 9. They stay until the job is done. They stay until the...
Why are they doing that? I don't understand.
They all enjoy their work. This is one of the few... The only place I can say that I've seen the overall level of enjoyment for an employee working within the company and having, you know, the constant... You know, there's interaction between the staff where there's always... I say amusement. There's fun, but there's also a dedication. You know that when the job's got to be done, and he instills that on us. So
how does he do that? What is it about him that makes this place special?
His personality.
What do you mean?
He's got the personality that
he's from Libya. He doesn't understand what's going on here in America.
Yeah, we try to tell him that too. So we're trying to educate him along those lines. But the reality of it is we got you bring the Libyan element to it. We've got a very diverse workforce. We've got individuals from Middle East. We've got individuals from the Philippines. We've got individuals from Africa. We've got South American. You know, so our organization is extremely diverse, and you know it flows. That the personalities that each person brings to the workforce, they're respected.
What makes it work? What's the special sauce?
Everybody respects everybody else. They get a chance to talk. We joke. We laugh. We have almost weekly. We have a community like lunch where everybody comes into the kitchen. You know, sometimes it's they'll bring food that they've cooked and prepared themselves, mm-hmm. and but we all talk and laugh, and there's no hidden mm-hmm. agendas from anybody trying to get ahead.
Mm-hmm. Joe?
So this is fantastic. Why? How? Why you?
Why not? I felt that in 2008, while working for a large system integrator, that I didn't want to do the same thing that almost every other system integrator tries to do in D.C., felt that I have a technical background, right? So success is measured by the systems, by the implementation, by your application live and in use by folks, right?
So you've got this great business and this idea, and you're improving systems, and now you're starting to make money, and you got these people working for you. But isn't it all about just getting bigger and better and doing it for you?
No, it's about doing it for them, doing it for the customers. At the end of the day, I could be a boss of a 75-person company, right? But the real bosses are our customers, right? So we're building out systems. We're trying to support the DoD healthcare and other federal agencies, right? Through innovation, through cost-efficient ways of software development. Because at the end of the day, their budgets are taxpayers' money.
Ahmed, what is the website address for the organization Concept Plus?
So Concept Plus's website is conceptplus.us. That's conceptplus.us.
Excellent. And we've been speaking with Ahmed
Abu Zakouk,
who is the president and CEO of Concept Plus. My buddy Les Smalling, can you please give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of hanging out with today?
Sure. Thanks, Herb. First, we had Tian Wang, chairman and CEO of Tech 2000. Then we had Ahmed Matmady, managing partner of Paragon Remodeling. Third, we had Mike Curtin, CEO of DC Central Kitchen. And last, Ahmed Abu Zakouk, president and CEO of Concept Plus.
Excellent. I'd like to thank my co-host, Mr. Les Smolin from Vistage, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hope you're providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders. That's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. And have a nice day. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to Executive Leaders Radio, the region's premier radio show highlighting local executive leaders. We hope you've enjoyed the show here on 1500 AM. You can learn more about Executive Leaders Radio by visiting executiveleadersradio.com or tune in next time right here on 1500 AM. That's executiveleadersradio.com.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTLPFMHD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics. Listen each week for Tech Tuesday on Federal News Radio. Every Tuesday, we zero in on how technology inspires innovation. Tuesday mornings at 11, it's Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, the latest on products that help bring policy to life. Then Tuesday afternoons at 12:30, join Federal News Radio's Jason Miller for Ask the CIO. Federal News Radio's DoD Wednesday. At 3, DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. At 4, in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a smart discussion on the issues and challenges of the defense community. Plus daily DoD updates, mornings and afternoons, Monday through Friday. DoD Wednesday on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
This paid commercial may not